So earlier this week, I thought I was going to speak on the topic of judgment or the judgment. And as I'm kind of, you know, pulling things together for that, it kind of dawned on me that the realization that prior to the judgment, which in God's overall plan seems to be much later down the road, right? We have opportunity for change. We have those opportunities come now, first, prior. We have these great opportunities that God's blessed us with, and are we taking full advantage of them before the judgment comes? Are we considering that our responses today are responses to events, to others that are around us, matter? Much of our daily lives revolve around our daily habits rather than conscious decisions. So Wednesday morning, you got up. You can shake your head yes or no, but do you remember what you did your Wednesday morning? It's probably pretty easy. Not from the standpoint that it's easy to remember 2-3 days back, but from the standpoint, it's probably about the same thing you did Tuesday morning and Thursday morning. You went through your cycle of habits. And so if you ask me what I did last Monday morning, okay, yeah, I know. What about a month ago on Monday morning? Well, yeah, I might not remember all the fine details, but I know I would have done this and this and this and this and this and this, right? Sadly, that's how we go about much of our daily life. We just go through the next habit. I'm not saying there's necessarily something wrong with that, but do we consider all of those habits one by one from time to time to see whether or not there's something we should truly retain, keep doing over and over and over again? Do you have good habits, or are there some bad habits mixed in? And it's our habits that make huge contribution to the ability for changes. If we want to change something, we're probably going to have to change not just one, but maybe many of our habits. There's an account in the Bible of Daniel. He and other young men have been taken by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. And the king wants them re-educated because he found that these young men had abilities that he thought he could put to good use as long as they were re-educated towards the Babylonian system. The king gains a liking for Daniel. After, through God's help, Daniel was able to walk through a dream interpretation for him. And of course, as all this is going on, some of the other king's officials are taking note and going, uh-oh, this non-citizen might take us out of a job at some point. We need to do something about this. And so they start hatching plans amongst themselves how they can trap Daniel and do away with him. In short order, they figure out that, you know, we're just not going to be able to find fault with him because his day is faultless in one sense. But then they come to the conclusion that, wait, maybe we can trap him when it comes to how he interacts with his God. In Daniel 6, verse 5, the men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the laws of his God." So they approached the king. And they have him sign a decree that if anyone prays to another except for the king, Nebuchadnezzar, over the next 30 days, that individual is to be thrown in the lion's den. In verse 10 of Daniel 6, it says, although Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he continued to go to his house, which had windows in its upper room, open towards Jerusalem, and to get down on his knees 3 times a day to pray to his God and praise him, just as he had done previously. So he did not start a new habit. He's been doing this 3 times a day. And the officials see Daniel praying to his God, and they immediately go running back to the king. And Nebuchadnezzar is saddened because here's somebody that he likes, and he just realizes he signed their death sentence. And he cannot undo his decree. In verse 18, after Daniel's been lowered into the lion's den, and the cover, the lid, the stone, whatever it was, has been placed over it so nothing can get in, nothing else can get out. In verse 18, then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No food was brought to him, and sleep fled from him. And at daybreak, the king got up and he hurried to the den of lions. When he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out anxiously to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you faithfully serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? And he hears a voice. And Daniel says, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they would not hurt me, because I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no wrong. So hopefully we've got some habits like Daniel that is allowing us to move forward in very positive ways. But do we have habits that produce or allow distress? Like King Nebuchadnezzar, he went to bed that night in distress because of his habits. One of them was pride. Oh, yeah, everybody bow down to me? Pray to me? Only me? Oh, yeah, I'd sign that. So what habits are we allowing into our lives that produce or allow distress? Not simply in our lives, but also the lives of others around us. When it comes to change, small changes can yield massive results. Let's go to 1 Timothy 4 and verse 7. Have nothing to do with profane myths or wives' tales. Train yourself in godliness. For while physical training is of some value, godliness is valuable in every way, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. So there's quite a warning here about have nothing to do with profane myths and old wives' tales. And we've probably all heard of some wives' tales. And we've probably heard of some myths, but do we consider what today's versions of those are? Do we first run to the psychologist before we start praying to God? That verse there basically is telling us if we want true change, then we must take on true good habits. True change is going to take great power, effort, and patience. We do not have, but we're in need of divine help when it comes to true change. In John 1 and verse 10, it says, he was in the world, and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, and his own people did not accept him. But all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born, not of blood, or the will of the flesh, or the will of man, but of God. So you and I, whether or not we've acknowledged it, have been given or have the ability to ask for everything we need for true change. But we can't just simply ask for the elements. There's also going to be a process, and we have to know or understand or be guided through the process. Training transforms the body. Education transforms the mind. Revelation transforms our spirit. The purpose for our Christian walk or our education is for spiritual transformation. We cannot expect change from something simply because we invested something into it. We are going to have to invest, but we're going to have to know what to invest, when to invest, and probably have a little bit of knowledge why to invest it. In order to fix something that's broke, we must invest the proper repair procedure. So if my bike has a flat, it's not going to do me any good to run up with it with an air pump and try pumping up the tire. Why does it have a flat? First, I need to find out where the puncture is at. And if the nail's still in the tire, I got to remove the tire. But then the hole's still in the tire. I need to fill the hole. Then I can put the air in, inflate the tire, and go back to riding my bike. So we're going to need to invest the proper resources in order for positive or true change. Too often, as human beings, we want to go about change in the way we think of it, in human terms. And we just assume that if I make this change, then my life will be changed. It's probably somewhat true, but it isn't going to be true change, what I'm calling true change. Job, you know, goes through a number of setbacks. And in Job 42 and verse 10, there's an interesting verse here. It says, and the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he had prayed for his friends. And the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. So remember, Job loses his family, or most of his family, pretty much all of his belongings, and then has a major health setback. His friends come along wanting to console him, but end up accusing him. You must be doing something wrong. So now are they friends or are they enemies? But we're told here God restored the fortunes of Job when he had prayed for his friends. Job had to put into motion the right procedure, the right elements, in order to see the real change. Well, Whatever we wish was different in our lives, we have been given the power to pursue change that will have a powerful effect on that area of our life. A construction worker would show up to work every day with the same lunchbox and the same contents. It was just a very simple meat bologna sandwich and a little bag of chips. But every day, he watched as his co-workers sat down and opened up their lunchboxes, and Joe would have lasagna. Jim would have some beef tips in his lunch. Greg pulls out this huge hoagie. The next day would come about. He'd open up his box again to the same bologna sandwich. And his other co-workers have other great lunches in their lunchbox. And one of his co-workers noticed that he's kind of drooling over somebody else's lunch and says, "Why don't you just ask your wife to pack you something different?" He says, "I pack my own lunch." He had the ability to change, didn't take any steps towards it. Matthew 7, verse 5 says, "You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. Before we can take the beam out of another's eye, we must first remove the beam from our own eye." It's going to start with us first. It doesn't matter what we want to change, how it came about, what all the effects are of that. If there's something that's bothering us, we're going to have to start with us. That's the reason I started with our response. How are we responding to this area of our life that we wish was different? We must be healed before we can help heal others. When we realize need for change in our own life, we need to act quickly, which means we should be the first to apologize. We should be the first to forgive. We should be the first to extend a helping hand. In most cases, we do not change until the disadvantages of staying the same finally seem to outweigh the hardship of change, the effort. We know that we're going to have to put effort into the change. And so it's not until we realize, no, this area of my life has gotten so bad, I'm willing to put some effort into change. Sometimes that new trigger is based on maybe we learn enough that we want to learn, that we want to change. Maybe we got acquired some new knowledge. It's like, okay, all right, I didn't know that before. Now I'm ready to make that change. Maybe that trigger comes from receiving enough so that we're able to change. I want a better car, but I can't do anything about it until that bonus comes through. Is that true? A lot of times we hurt enough that we have to change. But then, for some, especially for us males, a lot of times that hurt, we've prolonged it. Us guys, we slip and fall, take a tumble. We tell the other guys, "Oh, just give me a minute, just give me a minute. I'll be okay. I'll walk it off." no, that injury is serious enough. You're going to need to do something about it. So here's a big one. Change is going to require impartation to come into our life. Impartation is the giving or receiving of a skill, maybe some knowledge, information, maybe an idea, maybe a new principle or value. True change is going to require an impartation from God. How many times have we heard the phrase impart of the Holy Spirit? We need an impartation that we might change. We receive power, knowledge, skill, procedure. That receiving or that impartation then gives us a way to then give something that we could not prior. Maybe it's effort. Then that giving or act of utilizing what was given to us gives way to the actual true change. True change from our earthly way to godly ways. Change from God will always bring about growth and encouragement to others around us, which gives them opportunity for true growth in their lives. I don't know how well you can see them from here. I've got a jar with some peach pits. A seed. These seeds are dormant. Nothing's going to happen to them until there's an impartation. Of soil, of water, and the proper temperature. That impartation then is going to give these pits the opportunity as a seed to become a plant. The plant is going to give opportunity to yield fruit. The fruit then is going to yield opportunity for others' food. So we can make changes to our life, but if it's not without the impartation of God, will it yield more of the same? So I took 3 pits out of the jar. I can place one there. I could go throw one in the box over there. I could throw one to Steve. And I've changed their environment. Totally changed their environment. But their situation is exactly the same. I've got another one. Been hiding in my pocket. I take it out. I put it in the jar. There, little buddy. Now you can see everybody around you. Nothing's changed. They haven't been given what they need to fulfill their original intention. God's importation changes the person, which changes the surroundings. Now nothing looks the same, as all have changed for the positive, and all have the positive effects of the other. Big handful of years ago now, God imparted to me the knowledge, the skill, the ability to enter into a true relationship with Him. Through prayer, through study, and giving back as he requires. That impartation made way for change that my wife saw and gave her desire for the same change and impartation. Which then our boys saw and gave them desire for the same change and impartation, which is still multiplying into their family or future families today. We are all seeds designed to be destined to produce fruit, more seeds. And that cannot be done until we are in the correct environment. And too often, we change our environment hoping life will finally be different. No, we need true change. Not just different circumstances. Let's take a look at seven things we should do when we want to make true change in our lives. The first one, identify and understand what you want or need to change. I want to lose weight. I need a more reliable vehicle. Ooh, this one we got to be careful of. I want my boss to realize the value that I bring to the company. Wait, did I just say I want my boss to change? When God tapped me on the shoulder and I answered him in a positive manner, I didn't know what to tell Lori. I knew I couldn't assume that she would see it and respond to it the same way I did. I also knew I couldn't expect or demand her to respond the way I did. I knew if I asked, God would somehow fix it. And he did. Because one morning I walk out of the bathroom to find her kneeling on the bed praying. I had made a true change. And from that change, she was making a true change. So the first one is identify and understand what you want and need to change. Second one, believe you can change it with God's help. In Philippians 4 and verse 13, I can do all things through God who strengthens me. He's given us everything we need to make the next change. Three, this one's a hard one. We need to change our focus. The area that we choose to focus on is going to be where our reward is going to end up coming from. Some rewards we'd rather not have. Some we'd really like to have. The areas of our neglect are the areas not of reward, but the areas of pain. So I just mentioned the example of a boss who's blind to the effort that an employee puts into their job. If my focus is on the boss, it's all their fault. I'm doing everything right and at 110%. My focus is wrong. But here's a problem, because I can't make my boss change. The only way this is going to be solved is by going to God and just saying, I need help. We need a very different point of view for the situation. There's many times we tend to come up with a conclusion based upon a singular view of a problem. We just approach it from this direction. We never, ever consider it from another direction. God can see all the directions. So if we go to Him, He's able to say, yep, your point of view may not entirely be wrong, but you're not considering this or this or this or this. And by asking God, He can and will open our eyes first to what we should do, or maybe what we should not be doing, and or the how we should do it. It's not going to be until we're willing to first fix ourselves that we can have a positive effect on someone else. Third area was change your focus. Fourth area, look for a mentor in the area you want change. Look for someone who has more experience in that area than you have. I'd mentioned that prior to me making this major change in my spiritual life, I sought out Andy at the feast. Not as a mentor, in one sense. Maybe a little bit as a protector. He could give me some guidance as to how to protect myself. I knew a little bit of his background at the time, but I wasn't considering that in terms of his personal life. All I was considering was some of his expertise from work. As I got to know him more and more, I found out he was, in a sense, the perfect mentor for me because he had spent many years in a drastically different life, and he was willing to change and come out of that life into a new life, which is what I needed in the moment. A mentor, my rule of thumb, again, this is just my personal thoughts on it, usually is someone that's maybe 10 years above you. Not necessarily in age, but in experience. If you're a newlywed and you're struggling with something with your marriage and you want a mentor that will help you through a new marriage, find somebody that's been married approximately 10 years, 8, 9, 10 years. They've been where you're at, and it hasn't been so long that they forgot where you're at. At about 15, 20 years, it's like, oh yeah, I kind of vaguely remember that era of my life, but not all the details. But somebody that just concluded that era of life, maybe, again, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago, they remember. They remember the struggles of it. They remember the effort they had to put into it. They remember the resources that actually worked and the resources that didn't work. Why would you search out a mentor that has no basis or knowledge of God and His way on any topic? It makes it much, much harder to find a mentor. But how many times have you asked somebody for some advice outside of the believing background, and they've given you their opinion or their knowledge, and in short order you just realize, yeah, that ain't going to help me. So you need to look for a mentor who has chosen to seek God for impartation already. Number five. Look for a true support group or anchors in your life that will hold you accountable and encourage you throughout the process. There's a lot of things we shouldn't try doing all by ourselves. Us guys are known for, oh yeah, it's not too heavy for me, I'll pick that up. And then how many guys you know have back problems or knee problems, elbow problems? There's just a lot of things where we should have somebody else's help. Which means we really need to consider who we're hanging out with on a regular basis, especially those that have anything to do with this area of life that we would like to change. Do you need to pull away from some people or a group of people and draw closer to another group of people? This doesn't only apply to the human relationship side of things, but also what you read and listen to. A female that finds herself pregnant, not knowing what to do. She's heard of Planned Parenthood, so she decides to go there. And they give her a piece of advice. Abort. Here's why. Here's how. Here's how we'll help. Here's how you can do it. That advice is given so strongly and so convincingly that the vast majority of those that walk into Planned Parenthood abort. We can't afford to go to the wrong resource, hang around the wrong crowd, get advice from the wrong book. Spend time with those that will encourage you in true change. And maybe there's going to be times when you can't find a true mentor in the area that you'd like one who fits the qualifications when it comes to the spiritual side. But you can find individuals who fit the qualifications of the spiritual side that maybe don't have the qualifications for the mentor side. The prayer, help me out, the prayer of the righteous, fervent prayer of a righteous person avails much. At least find somebody to help pray with you. The sixth way to go about true change. Look for a new beginning in every ending. If you lose your job, is that the end of the world? Or is it the opportunity for God to bless you with a new and better job? Do we expect when we lose something like that, maybe our car dies, that God wants to bless us with something better? That graduation or that ending is a commencement onto something bigger and better. That's the way we're going to need to look at everything. Commencement is a beginning. When one door opens, when one door closes, another one opens. Where do we get that from? Revelation 3 and verse 7. And to the angel of the church in Philadelphia write, these are the words of the Holy One, the true One, who has the key of David, who opens and no one will shut, who shuts and no one opens. I know your works. Look, I have set before you an open door which no one is able to shut. I know that you have but little power, and yet you have kept my word and have not denied my name. God wants us walking through the doors he has opened, not the doors we're trying to push open on our own. The last area, we're going through a tough time. There's an area in our life we wish was changed. Maybe there's multiple areas in our life we wish was different, needs to be changed. We must practice gratitude throughout. Look what happened earlier to this service when Silas, a young toddler, is just beaming with laughter and giggling and happy sounds. Nobody here could help but smile because of that. It may not always be easy, but we need to focus on gratitude. In the moment, there are still things that we can thank God for. I've mentioned here a handful of times about what I call the thankfulness exercise for 30 days. You start by thanking God once an hour for something. No repeats. You can't name the same thing again. You do that for a week. Second week, I'm forgetting how it goes. The first week is on the hour, every hour. By the end of the week, that puts you in a frame of mind so that you're already anticipating the next hour. It's like, oh, I can't do a repeat, so what am I going to be thankful for when the clock hits the next hour? But at the end of that week, you're already anticipating what you're thankful for, but you're also anticipating the time. So the second week, it's as often as you think about it, you are grateful for something again. At the end of that week, you're on a roll. By the third week, now you have to thank God even in those times of distress. Someone cut you off on the highway. Immediately, thank God for something. You get that notice from work. You're laid off. Immediately, thank God for something. We have to practice gratitude. Grateful people are happy people despite what they're going through. To change our life, we need to change our hat, H-A-T. To change our life, we need to change our habits. To change our life, we need to change our attitude, our associations. To change our life, we need to change our thoughts. Change is in a process, change is a process. It's not a singular event. Let's finish up in 1 John 3 and verse 2. Beloved, we are God's children now. What we will be has not yet been revealed. What we do know is this: when he is revealed, we will be like him, for we will see him as he is. In the meantime, let's make true changes in our life. Changes that will help us multiply, have a positive effect on everyone else who is around us.